Welcome to the Being Human podcast, brought to you by Relate Malaysia. Join us in our conversations about what makes us human and why we think and behave in the ways that we do. We'll talk about mental health, emotional well-being, and how we can sometimes feel on top of the world, and other times like life calls for a large tub of ice cream and a big spoon. So come on in, relax, and let's explore this puzzle of being human together.
Hello and welcome to the Being Human podcast. My name is Dr. Chua Suk Ning, and today I'm joined by political analyst, producer, and former independent journalist Norman Goh to talk about ethical media reporting when it comes to reporting suicide cases for public consumption. As the President Information Officer with the delegation of the European Union to Malaysia, Norman has been a leading voice in calling on Malaysia's media to break the stigma surrounding suicidality and to create better awareness of how we can best help and support people who are struggling. Across his social media, he has also called for more empathy and understanding and less victim blaming, sharing helpful thoughts and insights on how the media can increase ethical reporting of suicide. Welcome to the show, Norman. How are you?
Hi, thanks for having me and delighted to join you in this podcast.
This is a topic that's very close to your heart.
Yes, it is.
And tell me how you got interested in it.
The interest really came naturally as a suicide survivor myself. Content warning to those who are listening. If you are following our discussions, if you feel uneasy at any time, you can stop listening. I'm giving a heads up who's following on this podcast. But generally, it's also from a personal experience, not just myself, but also my relations with also friends. Experiences with friends also going through difficult times. And then naturally, I move into advocating for safe reporting and also on mental health advocacy at the same time. So that has given me quite a journey over the past few years in understanding better, in learning about what is safe reporting. And although there has been a lot of effort to educate newsrooms, editors, and journalists on safe reporting, not just in suicide, but generally on mental health issues. But we have seen it's been quite a challenge over the last few years, but things are getting better over the last 2 years, particularly during COVID-19 pandemic. There is a greater sense of empathy. Although people are getting more aware about the situation, there's still a general stigma against people who are living with mental health illnesses.
As you said, you have a personal experience in it and a vested interest in it. What are some of the issues about how suicide is reported in Malaysia?
I mean, generally, suicide reports in Malaysia, unfortunately, particularly in Mandarin or Chinese media and Malay media, tend to steer towards a sensationalized reporting. I'll take, for example, with colorful headlines depicting methods of suicide, the location of suicide, sometimes name of the victim itself. To make things worse, it's putting a salt on the wound. Some of our friends in the media tend to use really graphical photos. For example, blurred photo of the body of the victim, even publishing video on national TV of the rescue mission, for example. This was I think it was 2 years ago in one of the flats in KL, that kind of thing, and even a photo of the victim standing at the edge of the building, for example, with the firemen. Question is, are these pictures interesting? Yeah, people will tend to share and like it and throw in all our comments. But at the end of the day, this kind of reporting with very sensational headline, with graphical photos, kind of impact on a lot of people who are struggling. You're just pushing them to just one push and they will fulfill the plan itself. And one more to say, the trauma that this kind of reporting can have a very strong impact, very traumatic experience for for the family of the deceased, for example, and they will see this. And things like that, even names can be traced back to them. And the people who are living, the family of the victim, will have to live with this. Question is it fair? So this is kind of things where we often observe in media reporting. Sometimes this is, although they may seem like, oh, okay, it's helping us in terms of the traffic online, increasing the number of shares. The impact of this is huge. Instead of thinking of creating better awareness through reporting like this, it creates greater stigma on those who are living, on those who are still trying to survive during these hard times.
There's been guidelines on suicide reporting for, I guess, more than a decade, actually. It's quite old.
Yeah, 2011, if I'm not wrong, from MOH. Right.
Mm. So we just passed a decade. But as you pointed out, there's still problematic reporting. And yes. So why do you think that's the case?
I think there is still a lot of effort need to be done in terms of sensitizing the media. And also, this has not been taught also in a lot of journalism schools. And it's often, and so it's just focusing on churning out stories after stories, getting the best photo, getting the best headline, but without looking at the ethics of reporting itself. While I can say that there has been some improvement in a lot of media that we reach out to, myself and also advocates have been reaching out to editors and even provide training for editors and journalists about why is it important. The question always boils down to why is it important, and we always bring it up to editors also that what are the incentives of safe reporting. The editors and newsroom leaders particularly need to understand that we are actually heading towards a downward trend of trustworthiness towards news. So we're sensationalizing such serious case, for example, on suicides. I always ask myself this question. What benefit does it have on the people who's reading the story? Do you actually provide better context on why the person is going through depression, for example? What do I need to know about depression? What are some of the ways that I can seek for help? Or how do I identify the signs and symptoms? Most of the time, this sort of information are not reported in the news. Very, very few media are actually following the guideline. Yes, we have the guideline from MOH back in 2011. And then recently, we have also a collaborative project between the Center of Independent Journalism Malaysia, CIJM, and Befrienders Malaysia, coming out with an infographic-based guideline on safe reporting on suicide. And also more recently, a collaboration between the psychiatric unit in Sarawak with the community ministry in Sarawak in producing another guideline, quite a similar guideline, but focusing on not just on media, but also police press statements too. Oh, I think this also, this is segue into one of the things that, aside from media too, press statements from police or fire brigade tends to give too much information to public, because these press statements will be picked up by the press. So some of the few things where in a guideline produced from Sarawak is to also educate on how to publish press statements from police on cases related to suicide, for example. So these are some of the things that efforts has been done, but it's slowly picking up. I mean, pick up by newsrooms, but there's a lot of work to do in addressing safe reporting. Unfortunately, because why the situation is currently, when we look at it, right, why the situation is as it is, and there is no place for the public, for example, to air our grievances or to complain on certain stories. I remember there's one case involving a TV broadcaster putting out a video. In other places, like for example, in UK and also in South Korea, they have public complaints about poor reporting, for example. In the case of Malaysia, we had a pro-time committee on media council that was established back in 2019. So after the change of government, we have no news yet about what's going to happen on that. You know, in order to address this, there's a very important need to have the Malaysian Media Council to address this issue. The Malaysian Media Council is by the journalists and for journalists and also for newsrooms. This is also a very important role by this particular organization as an overarching body to monitor good reporting and also to address unethical reporting in the news.
You've mentioned sort of three guidelines, and the earliest one being since 2011. And you've been doing, you and your collaborators have been doing a lot of work trying to raise awareness, but it sounds like pickup is slow. And I'm wondering what the barriers are. So it's not so much lack of awareness of the guidelines anymore. So I mean, you know, with the people that you talk to, they have now become aware. They didn't need to go to journalism school to become aware. You provided that awareness. So what are the barriers to adopting these safety guidelines when reporting?
Habit and culture, unfortunately. It has been a bad habit for a lot of newsrooms to really chase after. They look on the lens of whether the story sells. I remember I have this conversation with one of the editors back then, is that as journalists, we're not selling stories. As journalists, we are reporting public interest stories to the people, not selling stories. When you chase after stories, that this is what you get. Sensationalization of stories like that, and the important work and important focus and narrative of trying to address the stigma on mental health gets buried or drowned because of over-sensationalization. One of the, as I pointed out, the bad habits of chasing after the vanity of the numbers, the traffic and all that. Secondly, is also the culture of it, thinking that this is the okay way, the right way to report on mental health or even on suicides. For example, if there's a story of a person who was found dead at home, and you know, for example, in Malay, it's written as seorang lelaki ditemui mati mengejut di rumah. Then what they do is that, they put a photo of a noose. That is also another problem. And to them, they don't see it as a problem. They say, it's just for graphics. That is where, you know, they think the normalization of that sort of habit and also cultural views on that has to be changed. It takes time also at the same time. But what we are also seeing when we engage, particularly with a lot of younger journalists, younger female journalists, they're more aware of this, and they are the ones who have been helping to bring up the issue and to correct, to put the right policy in place. More recently, on the case of the incident in KLCC, a lot of media unfortunately put out the photo of what happened in KLCC. And I remember bringing that up, and quite a few media decided to quickly act upon it and change the photo. These are some of the things that where I don't want to do this over and over again. It's very important for newsrooms to have their own checks within. So they make sure that they follow the guidelines, putting in the necessary information, and also removing some of the reporting. So we've seen gradually they've been improving from one step to another step. Even like Astro Awani, for example, they've also been very, very supportive when we reach out to them to explain. And that has really shown some good responses. Of course, Target now is geared towards the Chinese media and Malay media. These are the two things that we are looking at to work towards for this year and next year.
Well, it sounds like you guys have done great work in educating and trying to persuade. So as a lay listener, if I was listening, could you explain to me what's the problem with having a picture of a noose? You just told me, like, okay, respect the family by not putting pictures of them, not even blood out ones, you know, no personal details. Then I was like, yes, of course. But a picture of a noose, you know, why would that be harmful?
Picture of a noose is also telling the reader about the method of suicide. It gives an impression to the reader or the person who is also going through a difficult time that may give them an idea to do a copycat kind of behavior as they read the story. That can be also be triggering because certain things like that, like noose or a knife as a graphic, these are some of the red flags that we always highlight to a lot of editors. We also look at some of the examples or guidelines from Australia. and also in the UK and also in the EU on safe reporting. Same, they are highlighting that, you know, simple graphics like that, you are introducing methods of suicide to readers. And this can be harmful as well. Even if you don't mention, even if you don't put the picture of the victim, showing method as a graphic and even in text can also lead to a triggering point for those who are suffering silently.
So don't report methods of suicide.
Yes, don't report methods of suicides. I'll give one more example. Last year, also another problematic reporting of a suicide case in Bangsar, where a couple, no, the story goes like this. A couple found dead at home, believed to have been a suicide. And then they explain further where they are from, how many children, and also talking about the methods of suicide using, for example. There was mentioned, and they copied exactly from the police press statement. So this is one of the dangerous things where there are people who are going through a difficult time, and stories like this can, it really leads to copycat kind of behavior. That's one. Secondly, the problematic reporting on the suicide cases in Penang, highlighting where it happened and then how many times it happened, how it happened, what time they go, what do they do, what car, and it goes so detailed. Because these will give an idea to people to commit the same. This is also another dangerous thing that I think our friends in the media, our fellow journalists, editors, must look at this very seriously, and it has a very detrimental effect to the society. And not only that, it's also a stigma. So when you report stories like this, if you're not careful, it will just, instead of giving better awareness to public on the issues of suicide, it creates bigger stigma on people who are going through suicidal ideation, for example. It also lead to people not going to seek for help. They said that, if I seek for help, I look weak. If I seek for help, I will lose my job. If I speak about my own personal mental health struggles, I may get lower job prospects. These are some of the huge stigma and discrimination against people who are living with mental health issues. So that's why in terms of reporting, these are some of the examples that I give are problematic ones on highlighting where the location is, where the method is, or even the recent one. I'll give you another example of the murder-suicide case at MRR2 involving a refugee, a Myanmar refugee and the three kids. There's one newspaper, I think it was publishing a story, the picture of MRR2 with an arrow pointing down, a red arrow pointing down, and an inset photo of the bodies. I will leave it to the listeners to decide, and also to try to imagine why is this very, very problematic. If you are listening to this, if you look at the comments, please reflect on it. And also very important for us to really, instead of reacting very quickly on what we see online, particularly when it comes to Facebook and TikTok, that is really horrible, and people sharing these kind of things. It's really unsafe. And we have to remember, these stories, these news reports are not only read by adults like us, young adults. It's also being read by a lot of children, school-going children. To explain that, why it is even more pressing now to be very, very careful and to practice safe reporting on suicides, is because more than 50% of the cases reported on suicides back in 2019, from 2019 to 2021 data, January 2019 to May 2021 data, there are 1,708 cases. May 2020 to May 2022 had 1,600 cases. 50% of that 1,700 cases involving adolescents. So there is a really important need for media to be very ethical, to practice ethical reporting when it comes to suicide. Because that is really worrying, and it's also a challenge too, because we are also seeing that sort of patterns of copycat where, for example, how do we do safe reporting if a death involving a K-pop artist, for example? That is of course news, but at the same time, how do we report safely on that? Because that is also affecting a lot of people, including children and teenagers. So these are some of the few things, the examples I would highlight. And if listeners who are listening to this, there are some triggering words or descriptive words that may be triggering. So be mindful as you listen in our conversation today.
You know, there was a study that found any media coverage on suicide is associated with an increased rate of suicide. So would you recommend then that we just ban or maybe just say, let's not report on suicide at all?
I would not. I would say we can still report about suicide because it is still a public interest story. But at the same time, how to report safely? Use that opportunity instead of sensationalizing, saying this is a favorite spot for suicide. No, use that opportunity to explain further why, what happened, how to get help, for example, how to identify. It's just more work. I would say be more generalist. There's more to it. It's not just straight up reporting that the 5W is 1H and all that. No. This is an opportunity for a lot of newsrooms to take this power that they have. Media is a very powerful tool. So it's not entirely just shutting down and not reporting about suicide. You can report about what's happening, but use that opportunity to educate the public on why people are going through difficult times like this. How do we identify? The next thing is that how do they contact for help? These are some of the few things they can do better. I see that a lot of media are picking up on putting up the phone numbers. Yes, we can do more than just phone numbers. There is a need to tell about, okay, if a person is going through depression, it can be caused by what? So we get people like Dr. Chua Suk Ning yourself to explain what is depression, what is bipolar, for example, what leads to it. So these are some of the things where to say that, there's no story. There are so many stories you can actually go with this. And there's so many opportunities as well.
Norman, if I could push back on you. So one is, you mentioned maybe the death of a celebrity could be of public interest, but I fail to see how, you know, let's say a housewife, an unknown housewife somewhere, you know, why her death by suicide would be an issue of public interest, you know. So and the second one is, if studies show that any reporting of suicide actually increases the risk of suicide, no matter how well you couch it and how safe you try to make it to be, wouldn't that warrant an absolute ban on it? If the purpose, as you say, is to reduce the risk of suicide.
It's a chicken and egg. I see this from a chicken and egg kind of situation. One, do you want to ban on reporting on suicide? Does it help to reduce it? Yeah, in a way, yes. I think you also pointed out it can. But at the same time, these are also some of the few things that's also happening in the society. How do we address it? And all that. So it's going back to be or not to be. You report it also wrong. You don't report it. It's also not helping because the public may not see this is a public interest, why we need a policy change, for example. And certain reports can actually highlight the plight on the needs of the vulnerable communities. So it's not every single suicide case has to be reported in the news. Like, for example, I'll bring back the case of the murder-suicide case of the Myanmar refugee with the 3 children. That is one of the ways we can address a few things. Access of public health care for refugees, the support of mental health for refugees or migrant workers, for example? What are the policy gaps on that issue? So these are also of public interest. So it's not necessarily on suicide per se, but also brings out an opportunity to address some of the policy issues as being faced by certain communities, for example, due to lack thereof, things like that. So there are good and there are bad ones. And I would say that if not all reports on suicide has to be reported, we have to be very careful. I would say be very selective. Say, for example, if the situation involved of, a suicide attempt that was caused by school bullying, for example, how do we plan in terms of reporting it? How do we lead to putting questions of how to make a school a safer place, for example? So these are a few things where I believe very strongly journalists and editors can be very creative in the ways of how to report, not just straight out reporting, but to also investigate further into the root cause of the issues that's being faced by certain community in the society. It doesn't mean that it's just straight up suicide. No, that is very superficial reporting. You go deep into reporting itself. That is journalism.
So it's not just, here's a story about someone who ended their life, right? Because really, what does that serve? And certainly I was, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking if, you know, when I was suicidal, I had taken my life, I wouldn't want it to be aired on national TV or any news for that matter. You know, and I think one thing, and I know you're talking from a point of as a journalist, and I'm speaking from point as a clinical psychologist, do my wishes matter? What if I don't want my death to be used for any cause or to further any, you know, public interest? I just want to be quiet about it because I just want to end my, you know, because I'm feeling hopeless. You know, it wasn't to highlight something, you know. So do the wishes of the deceased matter in this case for you?
This is also another difficult part on the wishes of the victims itself. For example, if, you know, that situation has already happened, and how do we address this issue? How do we report this issue? Of course, we wouldn't be a point where we would be able to understand what actually went through the mind of the victims also. And that is why it is a very delicate issue on how to report. Even when we talked about the issues of Myanmar, for example, how are we going to report? Do we actually understand what went through the father's mind during that time? Does he want media to take pictures of what's going to happen? Another question also, are we able to control on that? It goes back to, I think, our choices, even as journalists, even as editors, even as readers ourselves. The repercussions of sharing some of the images or information such as that. So this is a very, very difficult question. Very, very difficult question.
It is a difficult question. I think
yes, that it's not easy.
I know you're giving, you know, your sort of your best attempt to it. And I think it does highlight, you know, the complexities around this issue.
Yes.
Right. Mm. That there's tension. And, you know, as journalists, of course, you're saying you have to be held to a higher standard. Ask yourself what this story serves. You know, what's the purpose of it? Is it to sell something? You know, is it for business? Is it for, in some ways, the betterment of society? Right. So I'm reporting it to educate the public about, you know, the consequences of depression. And then there's also the person behind the story, the person whose story now is being reported. And has anybody asked them if they want their story to be used this way? And so, you know, there's so many facets to think about, and it's almost we're doing a risk benefit analysis. And I said, you know, I put forth to you this study that found in BMJ, British Medical Journal. I put forth to you this the findings of the study from the British Medical Journal, that reporting of suicide of any kind or how, even if it's sensitively reported, safely reported, is associated with the rise of suicide rates. And so if we did find a study that showed actually maybe it's improving, you know, safety reporting is improving the rate of suicide, but not that much. And maybe it's the absolute silence that really improves it. You were also caught within the tension. You know, is silence really the best way to go? Right. So it's almost like we're weighing the cost and benefit of like, how important is it for this story to get out? You know, and I really appreciated your point to say not every story of suicide needs to be published.
It's not like, for example, same situation of not every road accident you report about it, right? It's the same too on stories on suicide or suicide attempts. Not all stories need to be reported. Say if a story involving, for example, if I come across this one story, it involves a suicide attempt of a single mother. And then I got more information. Did she leave a note? Of course, we will not be reporting about what she wrote on the note, but we go deeper into explaining about what's happening, how it actually lead to it. What are the problems being faced by, for example, single women in the urban poor? So it directs into not talking about suicide per se. It moves into some of the root causes of the problems and let the conversation go into that. Conversation should go into what led to, you know, why did the mother didn't get help, for example. This sort of conversation should go rather than, oh, why the single mother is weak. That sort of comments being made to victims, to even to survivors, for example. So the conversation should not be centered on, oh, where did it happen, how did they do it. It should be centered into that sort of conversation of addressing the root causes of the issues on that. But I think these are some of the things where it's a work in progress on how do we change that sort of, how do we report on suicide.
And again, I think what you pointed out was really important too. It really brings the story away from the person. Mm. And that's what we need, right? We're not talking about the root causes as in, we don't need her biography.
We don't
need where she came, grew up from and what her childhood was like, but we need maybe the social context because she wasn't the only one at risk. You know, there are others who are at risk, you know, others maybe, as you said, you know, who are
her children,
right,
you know,
difficult situations who are suffering or enduring the same sort of stresses and that, you know, policymakers need to attend to. And, you know, I could sort of go back and forth with you, I think, on this for a really long time. And so I'm just picking your brain. I'm not a journalist, so I'm learning a lot from you today, but I think we got to end before my editor cuts me off. So I want to ask you, you know, what key message would you give to authorities, editors, producers on safety reporting of suicide?
This really requires a collaborative effort. It's not just journalists. It's not just the newsrooms or even the government. And I wouldn't agree that the government should take a punitive kind of measures to, you know, tell, oh, if you're reporting about this again like this, we're going to ask you to pay fine. Dot, 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 dot. Yeah, you can do that. But at the end of the day, my question is that, is it necessary? At the end of the day, everyone got to see the bigger picture on why this ethical reporting and safe reporting and suicide is really, really pressing. And even just yesterday, there's also another problematic story. It goes on. So it also brings the question, okay, how do we do next? And what do we do next? Is definitely, I always believe in continuously sensitizing, not just journalists, but also consumers, readers, lay people, everyone else. We are the consumers of such information. And sometimes there are a lot of people who are citizen journalists who tend to, you know, go out and do live videos on Facebook thinking it's very exciting. And then, oh, I get a lot of views, blah, blah, blah. The general public got to see this also, that why news are gearing towards that? Because people love to read these kind of stories. But the sort of desire to see this kind of content, I think, we got to ask, you know, for those who are listening, if you think that you are in that category, I would say, let's reflect upon it. And also look around your friends who are also struggling silently. Why? This is very important. So I think a few things that we can do from our side is, first to educate ourselves, if you're following this, is that there are many things that we can do starting from ourselves. Like, for example, how do we share safely when we see certain things online? What we can do, especially when we see our PCMC groups, makcik-makcik WhatsApp groups, when they start sharing, educate them, say that this is not safe. You know, it can be someone's mother or siblings. You know, you can educate them. Lah. Don't need to be so, oh, delete this picture. No. If not, I call MCMC and catch you. Sometimes that work, but I tell you, it repeats again. Be more empathetic and tell them that, you know, what if that is your family member or your friends, is related to someone, and try to think of, you know, how do they feel if you share this kind of thing? You can use that opportunity to educate, and also to reach out to, when you share this sort of information, you can use that opportunity to tell people more about the importance of mental health and how to identify depression or suicidal ideation. And also for journalists, I think one of the few ways journalists and newsrooms really can look at is, while there are a lot of, there are many, many types of stories that you can look out to, I would also encourage newsrooms to look into the, how do you report on suicide survivors? The accounts of suicide survivors are really, you know, more often than not, they don't dare to actually share their personal experiences, or they are actually suicide survivors, because there's a lot of discrimination. Currently, there is no law that discriminates people with depression. People who have been discriminated against for their job prospects because they suffer from depression. So these are a few things where newsrooms can really consider about putting the voice to the voiceless survivors out there. The accounts of survivors can really help to normalize the behavior of health seeking, and also slowly removing the stigma of the society towards people living with mental health issues. So these are a few things I think I hope the authorities and also lawmakers can really think about, connecting the dots of the different policy gaps that we have in terms of accessibility to mental health, but also at the same time, accessibility to necessary information that will serve the public more, particularly when we are addressing issues on depression and suicide.
Thank you. What I took away from that was, it seems to just boil down to something really simple. Have a thoughtful, compassionate, humane society. You know, think about your effect on others. You know, think about, is this a necessary story to tell? Is the way you're telling it compassionate? Is it promoting kindness? You know, and that this isn't just about getting more likes, more hits, you know, more watchers, but this is a human that you're reporting to. I think, you know, our society, perhaps a sense of increasing isolation, you know, due to the way our society has developed through technology, we don't see the impact of our actions on the other person as much. You know, it's kind of easy to just kind of put it out there and not pay attention to it. But I think we are perhaps developing to become a society that is harder to live in, you know, one that's actually less humane, less thoughtful, less kind. So to our listeners out there, you know, I know there was so much information presented, you know, really great insights by Norman that we can chew on. And if you're thinking, how do I do it? You know, just kind of think, how can I be more thoughtful about this? And let's think about it before I post it up. You know, let's think about it before I share it. And think about, how can I be more humane? And this idea that we're all united by a sense of common humanity, that this person that you're reporting is like you, you know, it's not different from you. And then to have a sense of compassion for that person who is going through an, obviously a really difficult time, and not that just this person, but the people surrounding this person. And that's sort of the one of the most devastating things about suicide, is that the loss of one life has this ripple effect of tragedy, really, not just in, you know, not just a family, but also friends on wider society. And, you know, it's not just, let's be curious, it's not just a story, you know, it's really a fellow human who's suffering. And to lose sight of that, I think, makes us a poorer society. So thank you, Norman, for sharing. I really appreciate all the work you and colleagues have done to hold us to a higher standard to improve reporting on suicide in Malaysia. I cannot imagine the amount of work that goes behind this. I know you're not being paid for it. So thank you so much.
Welcome. Well, I think this comes to a lot of collaborative work between psychiatrists, journalists, advocates. It requires a huge teamwork. I think you have rightly pointed out that, you know, the stories like that and victims, they are not merely just words or names or labels. They are humans. They may be someone's brother, father, mother, sister, son, nephew, niece. Because at any time, at anywhere, it can happen to someone close to us. And you never know how it felt or what went through and how that sort of trauma that can actually occur within that small unit of the victim itself. So be mindful. And then at the same time, we can actually do better. And I believe so. And I think we are actually working towards that and creating a safer space for us to report. But also at the same time, there's a greater empathy from the society towards people who are living with mental health illnesses. So there's a lot of work going forward. And thanks for having me, Sabine.
Thanks, Norman, for joining us. And thank you for listening to this episode of Inhuman. We'll be hosting guests on a regular basis, so be sure to tune in for some more insights on how we can understand ourselves better and learn to live a life on our own terms and one that's meaningful to us. My name is Dr. Chua Suk Ning, and I look forward to sharing some more valuable insights from the world of mental health with you very soon.
Thank you for listening to the Being Human podcast. To find out more about Relate Malaysia's online therapy services, visit us at www.relate.com.my or email us at inquires@relate.com.my. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Until next time, remember, we are all more human than we are otherwise. Be kind to yourself and take care.